You are listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. I'm Dan Keller, and this show first aired October 28, 2025. A proposed development at 1700 Strasburg Road in Kitchener's Ward 5 received preliminary approval at the Planning Committee meeting on October 27th, saying, quote, "The people we hire and create these reports are experts, and no offense to any of the delegates, but we are not all experts. We didn't all go to school for this." Unquote. Ward 3 Councillor Jason Deneau supported the decision. The project would see a nearly 40-acre plot of land which abuts the Huron Natural Area transformed into a 10-unit industrial space. The proposal will next be considered for approval at the City Council meeting on November 10th. The subject lands were first cleared in the 1980s for a development which never happened. Vegetation has returned and overgrown much of the area, which also contains four small wetland areas, one of which is 20 meters from the provincially significant wetland in the HNA. The HNA was created in the 1990s with the Catholic and public school boards cooperating with the city to protect the green space within the city. While the idea was that the protected zone would grow over time, the area around the HNA has been chipped away for industrial and commercial development, leaving a core zone connected through narrow corridors to other wetland complexes and fragmented forest habitats. A press release from the Kitchener-based grassroots environmental group Protect Huron Natural Area noted issues with the environmental impact statement for the project, including wetland classification errors, downplaying the effects of habitat fragmentation, overlooking species at risk, and the threat to turtle nesting habitat. In the planning meeting, delegates from Protect Huron Natural Area questioned the need for the project, pointing to a study which shows Kitchener already has a 7.2% vacancy rate for industrial space, the second highest in the province. Further, they argued the project will disrupt and further fragment wildlife habitat. In total, 18 delegates, including a university professor, opposed the approval of the project, along with several written delegations. Also delegating at the meeting was the proponents' consultants, GSP Group and GHD. They highlighted the efforts that will take place to mitigate environmental damage and reorganize the lands to host an industrial site and a nearly 10-acre naturalized area. One consultant told City Council, quote, "This is essentially enlarging the Huron natural area." Unquote. At the meeting, city staff recommended the approval of the project. Before the vote, several councillors noted that the land is not under city ownership and the lands have previously been approved for development. They say the current process is the best option to have input into the development. Subject land was sold by the city in 2018. Of the 9 members present, only Ward 9's Debbie Chapman voted against the proposal. This show features an interview with Ray Angott and Yvonne Fernandez of the Protect Huron Natural Area group. CKMS News asked Ministry of Natural Resources and Forests about the inconsistencies between the survey information and the report, but did not receive a response. Here is the interview which took place in the lead-up to the October 27th planning meeting.
My name is Yvonne Fernandez. I am a citizen of Kitchener. I live in Ward 4, and I was a former city councillor from 2010 to 2018. I'm now the president of the Dune Pioneer Park Community Association.
My name is Ray Angott. I also live in Ward 4. My full-time job, I'm a general manager at a local IT company. I got involved in this project just by looking at the official reports and noticing some discrepancies with them. And so my role with this kind of project is looking at the data and seeing where there's gaps and trying to get those questions answered.
Can you briefly describe the Huron Natural Area and its importance to the local environment?
The Huron Natural Area was established back in the 1990s in a partnership between the city and the two school boards. It was identified as a significant ecological area with sensitive plants and species. So it was set aside from being developed as an industrial area where it abuts the Huron Industrial Area. It has become a real treasure, not just for our community, but for people coming from outside of our community because of the diversity in the Huron Natural Area. A story was written by Frank Glue, who was one of the proponents who fought to protect this area, and it was called Samuel's Most Important Message. And it's about Blanding's turtle, which was one of the threatened species that lived in the Huron Natural Area. Unfortunately, we've seen a demise of the Blanding's turtle and other turtle species, but Ray will speak to that a bit more. It is also so significant because it is such a large area and it does have such a diversity within the green space. The challenge right now is that development is really pushing up against the boundaries. And there was a commitment when we set aside the Huron Natural Area, we being the city and the partners, to grow that area. Instead, it is being chopped up on the edges by development in different varieties. So light industrial, and intensive residential development.
And can you explain the current threats to the Huron Natural Area, including this proposed development, which brought your group to sound the alarm, as the press release says?
So I think one thing that people may not realize is that this is a 40-acre plot of land. It's a very large area of land, and there is evidence of provincially and locally significant species that were observed by the researchers who scoped the land prior to development. You know, snapping turtle is one that comes to mind. It's a source of biodiversity. There's several different species that live there. And if this gets wiped out, I mean, that's their habitat, that's their food source is just gone. A really, I guess, critical one, if you think about it, it would be coyotes, right? So it's 40 acres there of coyote habitat and food sources. If you get rid of that 40 acres of coyote habitat, where do they go? What do they do, right? We hear about other cities like Oakville, for example, and Burlington, and other cities in Canada where coyotes are a problem. They're attacking dogs, they're attacking people walking their dogs. They're kind of a constant threat. So far in Kitchener, to my knowledge, that's not really a day-to-day problem that we're having yet, right? But when you start going after these habitats for coyotes, we're going to see them more, right? They have nowhere else to go. What do you want them to do? It's not the coyote's fault. Take away their habitat and their food sources. They got to go somewhere. They got to do something. So I think that's maybe like one of the main threats that we could be seeing if you remove this habitat.
Yvonne Fernandez added more to the answer.
When you've got intensive development, so we're talking about impervious surfaces, so rooftops, driveways, parking lots, all of that creates a runoff that will eventually end up in the ponds. We've already lost a pond in the Huron Natural Area a number of years ago, and that has been that's really sad because, as Ray was talking about, the biodiversity requires, you know, everything from your little tiny bugs right up to your coyotes, your deer. If you remove those sources of food and ability for them to have water or whatever their needs are, you start removing that, you start diminishing and impacting the sort of the cycle of life, the cycle of nature. So if you have additional development abutting your natural area, that in itself becomes a threat to the ecological equilibrium within your natural area.
In a statement that your group put out, you said that you identified errors in the environmental impact study, including wetland misclassification. Can you go into a bit into that and why that matters?
We talked about biodiversity and species of concern. One of them is something called the grasshopper sparrow. And that is it's a rare bird that likes to live in like grasslands, not in trees. They live kind of lowland in grasslands and prairies. What the authors of the EIS, the Environmental Impact Study, said was that, sure, they live there now. They have a habitat in there now, but over time, their habitat will be overrun with bushes and trees, and their habitat will become unsuitable over time. And then the grasshopper sparrow will naturally find somewhere else to live, basically. The problem there is the same authors, when stating the case against revegetation, like this land is not going to revegetate, they make the point that prior development activities back in the 1980s, when this land was starting to be developed and that project got abandoned, but the topsoil layer of the land there was removed. And as a result, the land will not revegetate properly. It's not going to have trees, they say specifically. So it's a bit of a contradiction there, right? So on the one hand, they're saying trees are going to crowd out this rare bird and they're going to leave. But they're also saying that there's no topsoil layer, so trees will not grow. So which one is it? Is it the habitat going to be overrun or the tree's not going to grow? You can't have it both ways. So that's like one example of an inconsistency. Another big one is about how they counted turtle nesting. So the surveyors and the authors of the report are two different companies. So the surveyors, when they looked at the subject lands, they were counting what they called depredated turtle nests, which means turtle nests that were raided by predators and had eggs eaten. Those nests are easy to spot. They're basically a hole in the ground with eggshells scattered about. Those are the only ones they can count. They can't count the undisturbed ones because they're hidden, they're buried. The turtles don't show where they are, so they're really hard to count. So all the surveyors can do is count the depredated ones and report that out. Now the authors took that number, which was about, I think, 96 depredated nests, because those are the only ones that were counted. They claimed that all of the nests were depredated. So they made like they twisted it so it's like all 96 nests were depredated. But you can't count what you can't see, right? So the surveyors couldn't count the undisturbed nests. So there's an unknown number of undisturbed nests and 96 depredated nests. And the authors reached a faulty conclusion there, that because, you know, air quotes, all of the nests were depredated, then this is not a viable turtle nesting site. And therefore, no mitigative measures are really necessary for turtles, because this is what they call an ecological sink for turtle nesting. But that's not really the case. If you only count the depredated nests, then yeah, they're all going to be depredated. But they're not counting the ones that were not found because they were buried. So their conclusion that this is not turtle nesting ground is logically inaccurate.
If there's turtles in the area to make the nests.
So this land has been basically untouched for since the 1980s. So somehow they're there. They're fine, right? But it's part of the narrative that the authors of the report are writing, which is that, you know, we're going to come in and save the turtles because they're struggling. They can't have nests here. They can't survive here. So what we're going to do, we're going to create a new wetland. It's going to be a beautiful turtle habitat, and they're going to be just fine there. And that's the good deed that we're doing. So that's kind of part of their pitch to the city, right? Is this new created wetland and how that's going to make things so much better for the turtles.
The one that they're creating or proposing to create, that's just outside the development area, or is that further away?
It's in the subject lands. It's on the west side of the subject lands. It's worth noting there's already four smaller wetlands on the subject lands. They're considered anthropogenic, human-made, through the development, but they're still wetlands. They're going to obviously pave over those and then create this new wetland, which in terms of area is equivalent to the four combined. But going back to the point about the inconsistencies and some of the errors. So the idea, like, if you can imagine like a wetland, it's really hard to like draw a border around a wetland. Is it where the water stops? Is it where the reeds stop, et cetera? So there was a question, like there's wetlands on the subject lands. The closest one is like 20 meters away from the Huron Natural Area provincially significant wetland, right? It's just 20 meters away, like a little land buffer in between them. So it's a bit of an open question, like, should this be complexed into the provincially significant wetland, which would expand the border of the wetland. The authors of the report, it's a consulting firm called GHD, they actually wrote the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry, kind of petitioning them to not include the wetlands in the subject property, not to complex them, for two main reasons. Number one, they claim that there are no provincially or regionally significant species in the subject lands, which has been proven incorrect by the surveyors. Like we mentioned, there's many regionally and provincially significant species. Birds alone, there's 20 of them that were observed on the subject lands. So it's pretty well false to say that there's no significant species in the wetlands. And the second rationale that they used to not complex it was they claim that there's no habitat connectivity between wetlands. Like, these wetlands were not connecting other wetlands as like a movement corridor. But again, that was contradicted by the surveyors, who said plainly in black and white, two of these four wetlands are movement corridor. If you look at a map about how it looks, there's two large wetlands, the one in the Huron Natural Area and then one to the northwest of there, which is a stormwater management pond. And then there's like two of those wetlands on the subject property, kind of form like a natural like path between those two wetlands. So it's easy to see how turtles could use those wetlands as a movement corridor. But when GHD petitioned the ministry, they claimed that it wasn't a movement corridor. So based on the information that was provided by the consulting firm, the ministry agreed that these lands should not be complex. The wetlands should not be complex. So that's a non-issue at this point, because that was a decision the ministry reached based on the information that was provided, which, in my opinion, was flawed.
This is a proposed development. How do you respond to critics that say that blocking this development is just NIMBYism when the city needs industrial space?
I'm going to quickly say that people are going to go, well, big deal, it's a wetland. Oh, big deal, it's turtles. But what needs to be understood is that wetlands are crucial to our aquifers, which is where we as a region get our water. They also hold carbon. So when you start disturbing wetlands, you also release carbon into the environment. And that's something we learned as a group when we were working on the Bean Drive extension. But I won't go into that part. Ray, you want to talk about the vacancies?
Do we need the industrial space? And you can answer that question by looking at industrial vacancy rates. And in Kitchener, it's the second highest in southwestern Ontario. It's 7.4% vacancy rate for industrial space. In terms of like actual space, it's about 1.4 million square feet. So if you can picture that, it's like two times the size of Conestoga Mall in industrial space that's already serviced, it's already ready, like move-in ready kind of thing. It already exists all throughout Kitchener. Even within like 2.5 kilometers of the subject lands, there's 800,000 square feet of vacant industrial space, and no one's moving it, no one's leasing it, no one's buying it. To make the claim that we need this industrial land because we don't have enough, it's not supported by the data. Yeah, I don't see the business case for pushing this through, building directly adjacent to a wetland because we're in desperate need of industrial space. It doesn't add up to me.
The other argument that we hear too quite often from city staff is that, well, this was on the books 30 years ago. Well, you know what? 30 years ago, we were not aware of the environmental sensitivity around this region and the importance of Waterloo Moraine, the importance of wetlands, the importance of having those aquifers so that we can have water for our community. The region has taken some stringent measures in water reduction and water management. And if we don't protect these kind of areas, we are going to be looking at building a pipeline to Lake Erie, which will cost us billions and billions of dollars. And I think that's what is really important for people to understand. This is not about NIMBYism. This is about our future. This is about our drinking water. And this is about our ability to provide green spaces for our community. We want to build higher density so that we're not eating up more farmland. Then we need to offer green space for people so that they can get out and be with nature. You hear all kinds of talk about how we feel isolated, how we feel siloed into these tall, tall buildings. Let's not destroy any more of our green space so that people can get out and relax and be restored by what nature offers for us.
This issue, it's going in front of City Council soon. Could you talk about the process of it going through Council and what dates will it be discussed at the city level?
The Planning Committee will be looking at the application by Gateman Malloy on October the 27th. The meeting starts at 5:30. So we as a group have come together and created delegations and presentations that will hopefully flow from one to the next, because we don't want to be repeating information. We want to make sure that our presentations are succinct and that council will hear the real important points that need to be shared with them so that they can make an informed decision. Of course, staff will bring their side and Gateman Malloy will have their consultants there, I'm sure, to bring their side. A little bit flawed, as Ray has pointed out. Once that decision has been made at planning, it has to be ratified at council, and that will happen on November the 10th. The council meeting usually starts at 7 p.m. That will be another opportunity for additional delegations to come to speak to this issue And hopefully we are able to convince City Council that this is not the correct kind of development, and that what should be happening adjacent to Huron Natural Area, not only the Gateman Molloy, but other lands, that they should be included into the Huron Natural Area to protect the biodiversity and protect the ecological systems that are within the area right now.
Are there members of council that are trying to push this project forward?
I would say no. I know that the originator of this group, Chantel, has tried to connect with AO, who is the ward councillor for this area, and has not had a really positive response. I think there's so many things on council's plates that often things like this don't get picked up as quickly as they should. We've had lots of interviews. We've had sent emails to a number of councillors to try and raise awareness. We'll see if any of that comes to fruition on Monday, but I think it's important that they pay attention.
And how can residents take action on this issue?
So we do have a petition on change.org to stop the development surrounding the Huron Natural Area in Kitchener. We currently have about 3,800 signatures, and that number is going up every day. To learn more about, you know, the petition and what we're standing for, that would be an excellent gateway. And we encourage people, if they agree, to sign the petition. And also, as Yvonne mentioned about the planning committee on October 27th, to even just attend, having people there physically to show support for our group, and that council should consider not approving this development surrounding the Huron Natural Area. And if you're so inclined, you could even delegate. You can state what Huron Natural Area means to you, to City Council. Make your voice heard.
In closing, former Kitchener City Councillor Yvonne Fernandez reminds listeners of the importance of engaging with City Council. She said,
"The other thing that people can do is, if you're inclined, to send an email into your specific councillor. And even if you don't live in Ward 4, which is Pioneer Park, Dunes South area, that doesn't matter. You can send in a delegation, you can send in a letter to your councillor and say, I live in Ward 7, but I go to Huron Natural Area. I see how important it is. And let them know that this is not just a Ward 5 issue. This is not NIMBYism. This is about how important a treasured area is to this region, to protect it."
That was an interview with Ray Angod and Yvonne Fernandez of the Kitchener-based grassroots environmental group Protect Huron Natural Area. With the approval at the Planning Committee, the development proposal will go before the full City Council on November 9th. This is Dan Keller for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thank you for tuning in. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived versions of this program on radiowaterloo.ca/news and listen to all the LJI content at frequencynews.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.